2FM.
Well, a big thank you to the two Johnnies for plenty of entertainment this afternoon. It is Friday, the final day of March. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up this evening, BJ Botha on high stakes Champions Cup action for Irish provinces in Dublin and Durban. Alan Cawley, David Connolly and Fergal Brennan run the rule on some big association football fixtures either side of the Irish Sea. Plus Vera Powell names her Irish squad ahead of the next World Cup warm-up games stateside. In Gaelic games, Austin O'Malley and Shane McGrath set us up for the National League finals, and it wouldn't be Friday without Jane Mangan on racing. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet us at Game On 2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Yes, hello there, good evening. Hope you're having a wonderful Friday, looking ahead to a wonderful weekend of sport. Austin O'Malley is in studio. Austin, before we chat, just a couple of news headlines to fly through. Starting with cricket, and a magnificent 77 from just 41 deliveries from standing captain Paul Sterling handed Ireland a deserved 7-wicket win over Bangladesh in the final T20 game between the sides. It's Ireland's first ever win over the hosts in Bangladesh. However, despite the victory, it is Bangladesh who take the series by 2-1, having lost the one-day international series 3-0. Ireland will have a small bit of momentum going into next week's one-off test match against Bangladesh, which is followed by 2 tests in Sri Lanka. The Ireland women had a tough day at the World Rugby Hong Kong Sevens with 3 losses from 3 games. Ireland lost 17-7 to Fiji in their opening game after taking the lead through a Stacey Flood try. Australia got the better of Ireland in the second match, 19-12, with Katie Baker and Amy Lee Murphy-Crow the try scorers for Ireland. Brazil is up next for Ireland in their final pool match tomorrow as they continue to chase Olympic qualification under Alan Temple-Jones, who took over from Aidan McNulty as head coach just this week. Armagh star Amy Macken has made the decision to join her sister at Melbourne AFLW team, the Melbourne Demons, just days after indicating that such a move was unlikely. The 2020 Footballer of the Year is a surprise capture for the Melbourne Demons and will join following the conclusion of this year's All-Ireland Championship. Dublin star Sinead Goldrick also features for the team. The final bit of news, which, Austin, I'm going to throw an old quirky question at you in a few moments' time, but Brock Harris will play loose head for the Stormers if he comes on in their Champions Cup fixture versus Harlequins tomorrow afternoon. And why is that newsworthy, you might ask? Well, because a South African front rower will then play tight head for Western Province on the same day. So I don't know how you're as a front row at that level of the sport and the toll it takes in your body. I will throw that question to BJ Botha to see if he's ever done it in rugby. But Austin, in terms of in Gaelic football, has 2 games in one day ever occurred for you at a high level?
Now that you say it, I remember going back maybe in my earlier years, actually, yeah, playing with UCD in the Dublin Championship.
Okay.
There was one particular evening with, I think, a 4 o'clock game in Parnell Park against Mary's of Sagart, a Dublin Championship. That's when UCD were able to play in that. And I remember, actually fondly now that you say it, Davy Billings bundling me into his old Merc and got me out to the airport. bus lanes and all, I think we went down a few of them, to get me to an Air Ireland flight at 7 o'clock. To make it home to play in a relegation club game for my club in Lewisburg. So yeah, that was a tight turnaround, but that definitely, I remember the day afterwards I was absolutely broke up, but like 2 games inside 12 hours is a big hit. And just thinking of that, you know, the position that guy plays,
yeah,
in terms of how physically grueling that is, he's some man.
That's something else. More importantly, did you win?
We did actually win both of them.
Both happy days.
Yeah, which was brilliant, like, you know. So it was a bit of a mad sort of 12 hours, but worth it.
And
but,
the late, great Davy Billings.
Yeah, like, my God, he was such a great mentor to me when I was up in UCD, and he really put an arm around me when I came in there as a young green Kulshi, as he used to remind me, you know. But he was brilliant. I remember him promising me, because at the time I was saying to him, geez, Davy, I'll never get home. And he was like, don't worry about it, we'll look after you. And he organised the whole thing, and he got me to that flight and got me home. So
that's,
yeah,
brilliant.
What a great man he was. Yeah,
well, that's a great story. Absolutely.
Great memories of that.
Absolutely great. Servant to Dublin GAA and the GAA as a whole, I suppose, as well. Austin, you're going to be sticking around because we are going to be previewing the Allianz Football League finals a little bit later on. We have a bit of association football to get through as well. But first,
Game On Rugby.
But first, we are going to turn our attention to rugby because BJ Botha joins me on the line now. And BJ, I do want to get your thoughts on Sharks, Munster, Leinster, Ulster, Irish provinces in European action today. But a word on Brock Harris. Have you ever had to endure two matches at a high level?
Yeah, guys, thanks for having me again. Yeah, geez, that's something else. I think it's a first. But I do see he's on the bench, obviously, for Western Province, and then obviously for the Stormers, he's coming. I think he's starting. So, look, I think it is a first, you know. And obviously, at his age as well, I suppose one part he's probably got experience. But look, it's going to be an interesting one. I suppose I've never seen it at this level before. But you know, the Stormers do they do ring their changes. It's not that I think someone's missing out on games or anything like that. It's just it's an important part of their side. And I suppose, we'll have to see how it goes.
Very much so. We'll be very interested to see how that pans out. Let's chat about Irish interest then. Munster named their team to face the Sharks. That is a 12:30 kickoff tomorrow, Irish time, 12:30 that is. There are five changes to the side that were beaten by Glasgow Warriors last weekend and two positional switches. Orgie Snyman makes his first start for Munster since his debut in August 2020 after featuring off the bench twice since returning from a long-term injury. The game will be Snyman's Champions Cup debut with Anton Friesch, Craig Casey, Niall Scannell and captain Peter O'Mahony also coming into the side. Casey and Jack Crowley start together in the halfbacks as Crowley moves from inside centre to out half. Conor Murray also makes his return from international duty and is included among the replacements. Lots to get through in this one, BJ. If I start off by asking you, do you feel this is a changing of the guard moment for Munster with a Casey-Crowley combination starting in a Champions Cup tie with Murray Carberry as halfback cover on the bench?
Sorry, just repeat that again. You just broke up for a second.
Sorry, I was just mentioning the Munster starting team, and one of the headline kind of standout news lines, and even for fans as well, is Craig Casey and Jack Crowley starting in the halfbacks with Conor Murray and Joey Carberry on the bench. Do you feel this is a changing of the guard moment with the younger guys starting and Murray Carberry on the bench?
I don't know so much. I think Sharks are a tough place to go. I suppose we'll see the game, you know, as it pans out. But I think it's a tough place to go. We know, I suppose, they're playing midday. It's going to be 27 degrees, 28 degrees. I think they're going to need that backup coming off the bench. And we know at European level, you know, it's all about the squad, really. And I think it's a smart move, you know, bringing on big experience off the bench, you know, kind of when the game's probably a little bit tight in the beginning, give the younger guys a go. But no, I think it's a smart move, you know. I think the Sharks are also a side that has their guys on the pitch for that 50-60 minute mark and make the changes. So I think it might be a smart move and work in Munster's favour.
Obviously, we know the sheer strength and size of Orgie Snyman, but in terms of how he might change Munster's attack, what will he bring to the starting 15?
Oh yeah. Other than whatever he, you know, kind of brings as a player, and I just think it's his presence. You know, I think we know what's waiting on the other side. His counterpart in the South African side, Eben Estebeth, and you know, him, you know, pairing with Sia Khaleesi. So there's no doubt just his presence in South Africa, knowing that he's got that physicality side that he brings, and you know, you'd want to show it. I think in South Africa as well. I think you know, he's been injured for I think more than 18 months now, and I think from a South African perspective, the South African fans want to see him play well, even though he's playing for Munster. And you know, for Munster, it's just again his presence. He's you know, hopefully getting through the game and you know, getting some continuity through that.
Who comes out on top? And this is a duel and a battle I'm most looking forward to: Orgie Snyman and Etzebeth.
Yeah, they definitely do have, they're both specimens, you know, and they do have really certain attributes that are quite similar. But look, I think with Eben, you know, he's an 18-minute player. I think with RG just coming, you know, he does have one or two games under the belt now. I think, I don't know if they're going to push him for the 80. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. Well, I think Orgie Snyman again has got something to prove there, and it's going to be playing in South Africa. It's just going to be, you know, all up. But I think it's going to be a massive clash, and it'll be interesting how it turns out.
Bigger picture in terms of what threat the Sharks pose, what sort of challenge will they bring for perhaps Irish rugby fans that wouldn't know too much about them?
Yeah, I think they're going to be strong up front. I think the Sharks know the the weather's going to play a big part. I suppose it's going to be hot, 27, 28 degrees. It's going to be a midday game, so it'll be a short turnaround, short morning for them. And, you know, just leading on to the fact that they're going to be strong up front and, you know, try and bring the forwards through with Sia and Eban, and I suppose play their kicking game early on in the game, you know, force Munster to attack. But, you know, I think Sharks would want to put together an 80-minute game. You know, I think they've struggled to do that, especially at home. We've seen along the season, and they're going to be hoped to do that. So I think they've got their backs against the wall, and that makes the Sharks a real dangerous side, you know, if they do that. So expect that. Expect a forward basically orientated game and then letting out their pacey backs.
So when it's all said and done, who's going to come out on top Saturday afternoon?
Yeah, I think, you know, as we know with the history, Munster, European, you know, kind of rugby is so important to them. They've been there before, they've done it. I think it's going to be a real tight battle. You know, Shark, both on my sides, I've played many years for a special place in both sides. But, you know, I'm going to go probably from an outsider's perspective and say, have to go with the home side with the Sharks, but you know, I think it's going to be a close one. I think it can go either way. I think Munster can nip it in the end, but I think Sharks being home, I'll have to go with them.
It's another BJ Botha derby. Last time I was chatting to you was Munster Ulster. I was like, you played for everyone,
yeah,
man.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a special game, you know. I think Kings Park is a special place, and to have a European game there is a special, it's a special occasion, you know.
Very much so. Other team news that was announced today is that Leinster have named a Grand Slam heavy selection to face Ulster. 13 of Ireland's Six Nations winning stars in their starting selection, yet they must take on their provincial rivals without a few key players for the sold out Lansdowne Road encounter. Johnny Sexton, of course, is missing from the squad as the Ireland captain looks set to miss the remainder of the season, while Caelan Doris and Gary Ringrose are also absent from the matchday panel for the visit of Ulster. Hugo Keenan starts at fullback with Jordan Larmer and James Lowe named on the wings. This season's leading Champions Cup try scorer Josh van der Fleer is in the back row alongside Ryan Baird and Jack Conan. BJ, before we move on to the Ulster team news, I suppose, do Leinster have enough firepower to impress even without the couple of big name absentees?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I think they do, you know. They've shown it time and time again, and they've shown the kind of the depth of their squad. You know, I think for me, I was quite surprised about the draw against Stormers. I mean, even though the Stormers were going well, I think being at the RDS, I just think they're such a devastating side there, you know. So, look, there might be some sort of, I wouldn't say questioning, but obviously they're going to relook at themselves. It's probably a good result in the sense of what was coming up in a playoff game. So they'd relook at a few things quite carefully. Obviously they're missing a few big names, but you know, Leinster know their systems. They exceptional at what they do. They obviously, we know what they do in European rugby and what they've achieved so far. There's no doubt that they'll have a plan in place, you know, to put their systems in place. And I think it'll be a tough one to get for Ulster at the Viva.
Very much. It's going to be a tough job for Dan McFarland and Ulster, but they do welcome back their international contingent following the conclusion of the Six Nations. Ian Henderson is ruled out the game as he recovers from a forearm fracture, and as a result, Loch Alan O'Connor will captain the side. Joining him in the second row is Grand Slam winner Kieran Treadwell, who made his return to the Ulster squad in last weekend's home win against the Bulls. Behind the pack, the informed Nathan Doak keeps the number 9 jersey, with Billy Burns returning alongside at fly half. Another Ireland international returns in the form of Stuart McCluskey, who lines out at inside centre, with James Hume retaining his place in the side from last weekend's win to restore a familiar centre partnership, with Stockdale, Balakoon and Lowry making up the back three. Like, bigger picture here BJ, for this match, I find it very hard to believe that the spread is 15 points with the bookies. Like, do you feel this will be a tighter match than some people think? And just as I asked that, BJ Botha abandons us. Unfortunately, the line, BJ Botha is in South Africa, so he has unfortunately dropped out, but it is going to be a fascinating tie between Leinster and Ulster. We chatted briefly on that as well with Bernard Jackman last night, which you can get on our podcast. Finally, just to wrap up Irish provinces in European action, Mac Hansen will feature for the first time since playing in every minute of Ireland's Six Nations success, while Bundiaki will make his first appearance for Connacht since the Christmas Interpro against Ulster. Their respective Irish internationals returns are among six changes from the side that beat Edinburgh last week, with fellow internationals Dave Heffernan, Leva Fafita, Paul Boyle and Tiernan O'Halloran also coming into the starting 15. We'll be back in a few moments' time. Stick with us here in Game On 2FM.
RTE 2FM. Game On.
Football.
Now, you are very welcome back to Game On as we chat Association Football. Alan Cawley is in Tolka Park. Alan, before we even get into predictions or League of Ireland action or anything like that, how's Tolka Park treating you?
Shane, I knew you'd ask this. You'd love to be here right where I am now. I'm in that stand up in the top corner behind the goals, overlooking the pitch. Pitch looks really well, Shane, actually. I think chatting to the lads here, there's been a bit of work done on in the last 2 or 3 weeks. New groundsman back in place, and it looks very well, I have to say. The only thing, it's team and rain at the moment, but hopefully it sets us up for a nice, a good game. Feisty encounter, I'd say, tonight as well with Derry City.
Absolutely. Can Shells exact revenge for defeat in the cup final?
Yeah, because they're very good at home, Shane, as you well know. They haven't conceded a goal at home now. They've only conceded 3 goals in the 6 games as well. They've the best defensive record in the league, but they've yet to concede a goal at Tolka, so their home form is good. Picked up a couple of wins as well in that. It's been a bit of a mixed bag for them, but a good start. 8 points on the board. They would have been delighted with that, I'd say, at the start. Obviously, Derry coming to town tonight, who everybody sees as potential title winners. 12 points on the board. They have their unbeaten in the 6, 3 wins, 3 draws. But at home, as I say, Shells are good and they're very organised, well-disciplined, dogged in their approach as well. So I think this could be a tough night for Derry City. And as I said, the conditions will make it even tougher for them. I just see the manager here marching in towards under the tunnel, Damien Duffy. He'll be delighted to see. He looks in good form, Shane, and he looks like he's up for the battle, as he always is.
Good. Well, speaking of managers and coaches, so Rory Higgins is about to lose his Derry City assistant as Alan Reynolds heads home to become sidekick to newly appointed Waterford boss Keith Long. That's if you're to believe numerous media reports. How big of a blow will that be to Derry City and to Rory?
Yeah, this is big, Shane, and obviously it was, as you said, the kind of word started to filter through from yesterday in the reports, and I know from speaking to Alan as well, I think it's about to happen. It'll be announced after this game. Now, he is here tonight with Derry City, but I think it's going to be announced after the game, and he wanted, obviously, to pay respect to Derry City and to the players that he's been working with over the past kind of 18 months, couple of years since he went in with Rory, but it's a massive loss for them. And it's a huge coup for Waterford as well to get him back home with the appointment to Keith Long. And the two of them together will be a formidable force with their experience and obviously the brilliant job Keith Long done at Bohemians and Alan Reynolds' experience, not only as a player in the league, but as a coach as well, knows the league inside out. So I think with Rory being a young manager, new to the job, obviously he's performed brilliantly in getting Derry second in the table last year, winning the cup. But so much of that credit will have to go to Alan Reynolds as well. Here he is actually walking in front of me, but so much of the credit will have to go to Alan because it's very much a pair and a team between the two of them up there with Derry City. So I don't think Rory would be too happy, and he would have been very disappointed to find out the news. Obviously it's for personal reasons, so I don't think anyone will dispute that, Alan going back to Waterford for his own reasons. But as I say, it'll be a big, big blow for Derry City and Rory Higgins.
Well, it will be interesting to see how Shelburne versus Derry City pans out. For those not in Tolka Park, that one is on RTE2. Alan Cawley is with Rachel Graham on punditry duty. Des Curran and Kenny Cunningham on commentary. Alan, plenty of other League of Ireland fixtures this evening. Notably, Dundalk are hosting Shamrock Rovers. A tough test, I should say, for Rovers looking for their first win of the season. Who will come out on top in Oriel Park?
Yeah, it's hard to know, Shane, because, as you say, Dundalk have had a decent start themselves. At home, they're very, very good. Beat Pats 5-0 there a couple of weeks back. Beat Shells up there as well, as you well know. And if you look at them, I suppose, Dundalk, Stephen O'Donnell is trying to recapture the glory days of when he was a player up there and trying to assemble a squad that is capable of maybe mounting a title challenge. And he will definitely see the home form as being so pivotal and so important in mounting that challenge. And tonight, even though it's against Shamrock Rovers, the reigning champions, they'll still fancy their chances because, as we all know, winless Shamrock Rovers, who would have thought that at the start of the season, Shane? 5 draws and a defeat. It's been an incredible start, really, I think, when you look at Shamrock Rovers, that they haven't picked up a victory yet, and nobody would have thought that. So they're under a bit of pressure themselves to try and get the victory, but a tough game in Oriel. I would kind of edge towards Dundalk, and then of course Shamrock Rovers has the big Dublin derby next week as well, so it's a huge week for Stephen Bradley and Shamrock Rovers in trying to close that gap, because they can't allow Derry too much leeway. And if Derry were to win here tonight and they didn't, there's a big gap opening up already, even though it's still very early in the season.
Absolutely. It's hard to believe the next fixture I'm going to throw at you is 9th versus 10th in the league. It's a Dublin derby, St. Pat's versus UCD. Tim Clancy still serving a suspension with the added pressure on both Clancy and the Pats team. Is this already a must win for Pats, even as early as match day 7?
Yeah, I think so, Shane, yeah. And not must-win in the sense that, oh, where is our league season going or what's the story with Tim? Because obviously Tim was under a serious bit of pressure, but they got the result against Shamrock Rovers in the last outing, scoring the last goal. But I just think, based on resources purely, same path, full-time outfit. Obviously, we all know UCD and their limitations in terms of their resources. And they should be winning. Pat should be beating UCD at home all day, every day. And I think they will tonight.
Okay. Cork City versus Drogheda United is this evening's final fixture. Would this be a fixture both teams are targeting in terms of a big chance to get 3 points?
Yeah, and you would think that at the start of the year, these would have been the fixtures that both of those teams would have been pinpointing as 3 points, with a view to thinking they're going to be the teams that are going to be around us towards the bottom end of the table. But Drogheda have had a brilliant start, Shane. As you know, they're riding high up at the top end. I think they're fourth. They've had a great start. And Cork themselves have had a mixed bag of a start. They obviously suffered a defeat in their last outing, 2-0 to Shelburne. So they'll be looking to bounce back to winning ways. But we watched them on the opening day of the season, and I was thinking it's going to be a really long, hard season for Cork City. They were very naive in their approach, and they struggled against Bohemians. But then I saw them 3 or 4 weeks later against Sligo Rovers in the Showground, and they played really, really well. So I think they have improved in that 3 or 4 weeks that they've obviously since the league has started. And that'll be one that they'll certainly target, because they'll be looking at Drogheda, a part-time outfit as well in the league, and thinking we can take 3 points off these at home tonight. And certainly if they're to stay up in the league and have a good season and establish themselves back in the Premier, they need to be beating Drogheda at home.
Absolutely. Very briefly, because I want to pick your brain on the Irish Women's National Team squad that was announced today, but I can't let you go without asking about tomorrow night's fixture, Sligo Rovers Bowes. Will Sligo stop Bowes near perfect start to the season?
Hopefully, Shane. Yeah, it's going to be a huge game. Again, I think there's a bumper crowd expected, as we've seen across the board in all the games so far. Bowes coming to town, riding high, 15 points on the board. Declan Devine's had a brilliant, brilliant start. Everything is good on and off the pitch with Bohemians at the moment. But Sligo Rovers themselves had a very good result against Derry in their last outing, 1-1, and they probably should have won as well. So should be a good game. Looking forward to it, Shane, and hopefully the Bitter Red get the result.
Hopefully, says you. Just to mention, Division 1 fixtures this evening, 7:45, Athlone Town v Galway United, Cove Ramblers v Bray Wanderers, Waterford v Finn Harps, Wexford v Treaty United, and tomorrow Kerry are on the road to Longford Town at 7:30. So, Alan Colley, as I mentioned there, Vera Powell's squad has been announced, and Katie McCabe has been included for April's doubleheader with the USA. Vera Powell's team continued their World Cup preparations with a clash against the world number one ranked Americans in Texas on April 8th. And in Missouri, 3 days later, McCabe, of course, injured her foot in Arsenal's Champions League quarterfinal win over Bayern Munich on Wednesday, ending her night in crutches and wearing a protective boot. But Pau revealed today that it is not a long-term injury. It is just a matter of whether she can play against the USA or not, but there's no fear for the World Cup, which is great news for Ireland. In terms of who is in the squad, Piemont United's Tara O'Hanlon and Alana McAvoy of Shamrock Rovers are rewarded for their good recent form in the League of Ireland Women's Premier Division, while Lewis FC's Sophie Whitehouse also gets a first call-up as goalkeeper cover. Shelburne's Jessie Stapleton is recalled to the senior squad. As I mentioned, 27 players selected in total, a couple of players out injured. Niamh Fahey, Chloe Mustaki, Ellen Malloy, Jess Sue and Leanne Kiernan, while Megan Campbell is unavailable due to personal reasons, who will all be there thereabouts when it comes to a World Cup squad, no doubt. So what do you make of the squad selected? Any notable absentees in your opinion, Al?
Not really, to be honest with you, Shane. As you said, the notable absentees really are the injuries. The girls, like the likes of Chloe there that you named, and Niamh. So hopefully they will be back in time, and obviously they'll all pushing to be back, obviously a race to get fit for the World Cup. But I think with the squad that Vera has named, if you look at it now, what we've never had really, Shane, over the kind of period that Vera's been in charge, is strength and depth in the squad. Because if you were to go back through all our squads over the last kind of 18 months, it's always been kind of familiar enough, and we've always kind of known the names that she's picked. Whereas now, you look at the squad that she picked, obviously, for the last games and for these games, there's new faces coming in, there's competition coming in to the squad. And that's good. That can only be a good thing, especially when you're preparing for a World Cup. And I like the fact that Vera said in the press conference today as well that she's fully aware that you're making and breaking girls' dreams here of playing in a World Cup. And she wants to be so attentive in terms of the games and the minutes that everyone's playing, and giving everyone an equal and fair opportunity. And if you're performing and playing well, you'll be in the squad. And I think that's good to see. And the fact that we have 5 home-based players in the squad as well, I think we have to have some sort of representation from the League of Ireland here. And it's great to see the young girls like Tara getting a call-up in Alana as well.
Indeed, I wholeheartedly agree with all of your sentiments. Alan Colley, enjoy Talca Park. I might see you there in about an hour's time or so if the
Dublin. Give me a wave, Shane. Give me a wave.
Have a good one, Alan. Appreciate you taking the call. Okay, we're going to stay chatting football because former Ireland international David Connolly is on the line, as well as UK-based journalist Fergal Brennan. And before we chat Champions League, gentlemen, David Connolly, it's not very often I get to chat to a former Ireland number nine. And I suppose that leads me on to my next question for you, David, because it's a bit newsworthy at the moment, because Shane Long has said he knew he wouldn't have a long-term Republic of Ireland future under Stephen Kenny after he was asked to unwittingly pass on his number nine jersey to Adam Ida. So Shane Long was speaking on a podcast and revealed that he... I think it was a case of Stephen Kenny had this idea of some of the older, more experienced players handing over the jerseys to the new recruits, and it's customary, I suppose, for the newer, younger players to have higher numbers. But Shane Long was aghast when he realised he was handing over the number nine jersey he wore for so long that he inherited from Kevin Doyle to Adam Ida. Has, like, what do you make of it, I suppose, David Connolly? Would you be sharing Shane Long's sentiments of, like, what's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, that's a seamless link into this controversial topic. I mean, look, Shane, I can see this from both sides, right? Let's start from the player's perspective, you know. And I've seen people say, well, you know, Shane, he played X amount of caps and this amount of goals. You know, Shane turned up, won 80-plus caps or whatever, served his country really, really well, right? To me, this seems like a really simple case of bad communication from Stephen, because I love the idea of, you know, passing down the baton to, you know, to the new sort of the new era, the new players, you know, the new dawn, whether it's Adam Ida or someone else. But if he was going to be handing over his shirt, his so-called number nine, then I certainly think Stephen should have spoke to him. I mean, that's not, I don't think that's beyond the realms of showing a degree of empathy towards, look, you know, your time won't be coming to an end. You know, this is what I'd like you to do. And I'm sure if he spoke to Shane about that, I don't think that would have been an issue at all. Look, we all know we're just kind of, you know, passing through, right? You know, we might have a particular number for X amount of time if you're lucky enough. And look, I picked up plenty of caps for the odd minute here and there. And for me, you know, didn't matter. Great. Okay. And the only time I had an issue was when I didn't think I was communicated to very well when Don Givens took over for a very short period. And I think it just comes down to communication, right? Because, you know, we're all human beings. And I think we all love that shirt, but we also, I think, could do with being told and being probably, you know, being told what was coming, maybe, you know. And I think that I can understand that from Shane's point of view. And I think from Stephen's, I don't know, maybe he felt it wasn't that big a deal. I don't know. Maybe he felt that Shane might have known it was coming, you know. But either way, I mean, it's certainly avoidable. Just with a bit of good communication, I would have thought that would have been avoidable. So Shane understands what's coming his way. You know, his time in the side is going to be less. But, you know, he doesn't lose face, so to speak, by, you know, maybe losing his shirt. And it doesn't matter whether he feels Adam's worthy or not, you know, because in Stephen's eyes, he feels Adam is worthy of the nine. But I guess that's why I very rarely took a particular number, because I would have hated for it to be taken off me. I think that's one of the worst ways. But anyway, look, I can see it from both ways. No big deal for as I can see.
Yeah, no, it is very interesting just to get your thoughts, considering your position having featured for Ireland for many years. Gents, let us chat Premier League. And if I bring Fergal Brennan into the conversation, because over four seasons there was a total of one Premier League point between them. This season there are 19 points between Manchester City and Liverpool, who kick off the early kickoff tomorrow, 12:30. Erling Haaland is still a doubt, according to Pep, for City. So Fergal, I suppose my question is, do Liverpool have the ability to try and bridge the gap to City and start by doing that with an away win tomorrow at lunchtime?
They certainly don't have the ability to bridge that gap this season. But I kind of repeat what I normally say on a Friday evening about Liverpool when they're facing an important game, which is the same across the board all the time with Liverpool. Given the attacking talent that they've got, they can score goals and they can create problems for any team in the Premier League and the Champions League. And I know I sound a bit like a broken record, but it genuinely is the truth. They are able to do that. We saw that against Manchester United a few weeks ago. They can, when it all clicks, just tear teams to pieces. The concern against the Manchester City is their ability to leave themselves open and get caught out in the way that Man United did and the way that various teams are still being caught out by Liverpool is much, much reduced. Obviously, as you say, the gap between them this season is huge. Liverpool are not in the title race. They're in the top four race as it stands. But they do still have a relatively good record against Manchester City. I think they've lost just one in the last four in the Premier League. They haven't lost at the Etihad since 2020. And Liverpool are still one of the best teams in the Premier League. They're not the best or the second best based on this season, of course. But I think that the old adage that I keep referring back to, that they can terrorise teams and score goals, I fancy them to score tomorrow. But this idea that they can kind of shock City in the way that they have done in the past, and Pep Guardiola is obviously very methodical, and sometimes Jurgen Klopp, the way that he sets his team up and the way that he drives them on when they go out onto the pitch, particularly at Anfield, can just catch teams cold, no matter how talented they are. I just look at this tomorrow. Pep Guardiola knows what's coming down the line. They cannot afford to drop anything, because every test that's getting thrown in front of Arsenal, they're passing it, they're bounding over every hurdle. And he now knows that they need to win every game. They need to beat Arsenal in that game later this month if they want to keep alive any chance of dragging them back. So I think Liverpool will give City a couple of shocks tomorrow. I do expect them to score, but you just get the sense that City know this is too important to be anything other than a win.
I noticed during the week, David, that Virgil van Dijk was criticised this week by Ruud Gullit and Marco van Basten for his leadership style. And like, when you look at Liverpool's season as a whole and it's been relatively poor, has a lack of leadership been one of the main contributing factors?
I mean, look, I'm sure he came in for a bit of stick. You know, the Dutch press can be pretty harsh, especially after the terrible result against France, you know. But, I mean, for Virgil, I'm sure he'll be hoping, well, hoping is the wrong word, but even if Haaland doesn't play, right, they've still got Julian Alvarez. So whoever he comes up against, and I think they've only lost once, right, without Haaland or something like that. I think it was against Southampton in the Cup, wasn't it? So either way, they're going to be just as strong, right? They're going to be just as strong. How you're going to stop them will be a huge challenge for them. But look, as Fergal was saying, leadership qualities, all that sort of stuff, you know, obviously you come under criticism when you're not at the levels that you were. But saying that, their results against the top six teams, you know, in that mini little league table, they are top of that mini league table. So, you know, against Newcastle, Chelsea, drew with them, you know, you can keep going. Tottenham, they've come out on top. They are top of that little mini table. So, look, it's not beyond the realms of possibility they could get something tomorrow, but it's going to be a big ask. I think it's going to be a really... The only thing you'd say is after international break, you basically have one session with the lads. You know, Pep would have had one training session. What does he do? Do you risk Haaland? I don't think you do, but as Fergal was saying as well, look, they're 8 points behind Arsenal, right? Game in hand. Say they win this, they're five behind. Then they've got to play Arsenal. If they beat them at home, then they're only two behind. And then Arsenal got to play Liverpool. So it is well within the possibilities that they could still overtake Arsenal. Absolutely, but they've got to beat Liverpool. That's for starters.
Well, they've got to beat Liverpool, and time is already defeating me. Gentlemen, unfortunately, I'm going to have to cut the soccer chat a bit short this evening. But David Connolly and Fergal Brennan, thank you both very, very much for joining us. Just a bit of news that will interest, that has an Irish interest as well, is that Anthony Barry, currently on the coaching ticket at Chelsea, is reportedly going to join Thomas Tuchel at Bayern Munich. So it just really shows how highly sought after Anthony Barry was, of course, part of Stephen Kenny's Irish management team not too long ago. Okay, Shane McGrath is coming up on Hurling, and Austin O'Malley is standing by patiently to chat Gaelic football. Stick with us here in Game On 2FM.
RTE
2FM.
Game On.
Gaelic football.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On. on. We are flying through this evening's show. Austin O'Malley is in studio to preview the Allianz League football finals. Austin, let us start with Division 1, because the Division 1 schedule will end as it began, with Connacht adversaries Galway and Mayo going toe-to-toe. Before I get your opinions on who is going to come out on top, there is some breaking news, I suppose, in the last 10-15 minutes. Mayo have already announced their team to start, and Kevin McStay has made 10 changes from the side that were defeated by Monaghan last time out. Colin Reap replaces Robbie Henley in goal. Jack Coyne comes in for Duncan McHugh at cornerback. David McBrien replaces Padraig O'Hara at fullback, with Sam Callanan the only player to retain his position in the fullback line from last Sunday. There are two further changes in the halfback line, with Conor Loftus returning to his regular spot at centre back in place of Jason Doherty, and captain Paddy Durkin coming into the starting 15 in place of Michael Plunkett. Stephen Cohn, who impressed against Monaghan, remains at wing back. Mayo's formidable midfield league partnership is restored, with Dermot O'Connor, Matty Ruan back in the middle of the park. O'Connor returns in place of Castlebar Mitchell's youngster Bob Toohey on this occasion. Up front, McStay has also recalled sharpshooters Jack Kearney, Ryan O'Donoghue, James Carr and Fionn McDonough. Kearney replaces Frank Irwin. McDonough comes in for Kevin McLaughlin. James Carr starts in the edge of the square ahead of Connor McStay, with Ryan O'Donoghue getting the nod ahead of Paul Towey for the league final. Jordan Flynn's at wing forward, and Aidan O'Shea, who's named the corner forward, are the only two Mayo forwards that remain from last week. So I suppose if we're talking about, is this going to be shadow boxing or is this going to be at Mayo full tilt? That's a pretty strong starting 15.
No, it is, yeah. And you can see he has kind of reverted back to what he had unearthed, I suppose, over the previous six games that had, you know, stood them in good stead there. No big surprises at all in terms of when you look through the 15 that have gone there. Like, there's notably a lot of those guys that are in really good form. For me, looking at it there, which will, I think, will be an acid test for that full back line coming up against a really, really sharp Galway forward line at the moment. When you look at Jack Coyne, David McBreen and Sam Callanan, they're quite young and inexperienced to a point, and Croke Park is a different animal. So it'll be really interesting to see how those three guys stand up against the quality that is. Obviously, Shane Walsh, Comer could be in the mix, Finnerty buzzing around there. So they'll have a busy afternoon.
I'm always hesitant to ask who wants to win a league final more, but who needs it more in terms of Mayo wanting to spur them on for the summer, getting actual silverware, or Galway looking to lift the trophy considering how close they came in the championship?
Yeah, I think it's a really, really great point. I looking at it all week, I was thinking that probably Galway needed a little bit more coming off the back of maybe losing the All-Ireland final last year and that experience in Croke Park. And also looking through the records, Galway haven't won, a National League title in nearly 40 years, if that's correct. So Pádraig Joyce would definitely, I think, like to be coming down the Inn4 with a trophy after the weekend. They've managed themselves really, really well in terms of the way they've navigated the National League. Those three big wins, particularly last weekend against Kerry, because that was a game that Kerry, going into that, thought they had to win, and Galway managed to come out on top. So I think from Galway's perspective, in terms of their development and so on, they're perceivably a bit further ahead than where Mayo is in terms of the development. So a trophy would definitely, I think, bolster them heading into summer football a little bit more than it would probably Mayo.
So who's going to win? Easy question for you.
Yeah, a very easy question. God, yeah, I genuinely think it's going to be really, really tight. Looking on paper, I think maybe Galway could shade it in terms of the firepower they have up top, but looking at Mayo, a lot of strength and depth there. I'll give a nod to my own county, Mayo, I think, just with energy and momentum and so on. But I would not be surprised if this thing went right to the wire and even extra time or whatever comes out of that. Not that Kevin McStay would like me to hear saying that, but given that he's out in 7 days. But it's going to be a fascinating encounter, because there's never anything between them, and it's a derby game.
Mayo didn't get their wish. It's not on the Saturday, so that one throws in on the Sunday at 4 p.m. We're working our way back here, Austin. So that's Division 1. Division 2, Dublin is the curtain raisers. Not often that you say that. So Derry Dublin is at 1:45 before the Division 1 final. Again, like, I mean, they went at it proper in the league. Might this lack the intensity of the league clash in the league final, considering again we're edging closer to championship, or will this be a proper ding dong battle?
I think this will be full blooded. Okay. I really do. I think Dublin, you know, they did a really, you know, solid effort to try to pull, I suppose, that Derry system apart in the last encounter, and came up a little bit short in it. So I think they'll want to right the wrong of that. And equally, I think Derry probably want to come to Croke Park and beat a big gun like Dublin, like last year. And we look at the Derry system, did get picked apart against Galway in Croke Park. We know there's a little bit more space. Croke Park plays a little bit wider and faster, so it'll be a great way to road test his system in Croke Park again. When you look at it from obviously Rory Gallagher's perspective, so I think this thing will be full blooded, and I think it'll be a really, really savage encounter. It's an intriguing one.
Considering how well Derry have gone in the league so far, you know, they did top the Division 2 and now they are in the league final. Like, they'll be keen to prove last year was no fluke, but regardless of this result, is there any concern of second season syndrome for Derry? I can't see it. I think they're going so well already.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think they've actually doubled down. And for me, which was a big flare sent up by Derry, was the return of Conor Glass and the Glen boys coming straight back into the panel right after their club season had finished. There was no sabbatical or no hiatus where the guys went away for 3 or 4 weeks. They returned immediately. So that to me was a signal that these guys were really, really up and at it and were taking this... you know, they wanted to push this thing on. So from a manager's perspective, to see that, and you, when you see the behaviours like that being exuded from some of your senior players, it bodes well. So I definitely think they're looking to push this on, and I think they have, you know, moved their game plan on a little bit as well this year. It looks to be have been embedded in a little bit better as well, and they look really, you know, they're pretty well fortified at the moment.
Two finals are on Saturday. I want to chat about them, but before I do, one word answers. Division 2 champions, Dublin or Derry?
I'll plumb with Dublin.
Okay. Stephen Cluxton, does he start or is he on the bench?
Ooh, big one. Wouldn't be surprised to see him in nits, but more than likely he'll be on the bench.
Okay, we'll be very harsh on David O'Hanlon. He's gone
very
well.
Harsh. He's been excellent. He's been super.
He has. Yeah. Okay. Tomorrow, Division 3, 7:15 PM, Cavan versus Fermanagh. Ulster battle for Division 3 bragging rights. Cavan are favourites. Fermanagh looking to cause a shock. Will the favourites win?
I think they probably will. I think they'll edge it, just given their experience, big game experience. When you look back, they're a team that have won an Ulster title back in 2020, which isn't that long ago. A lot of those central characters and pillars are still there within, you know, within that Cavan system. I think there might have been a little bit of shadow boxing last week, but that's not to say, like, I think actually Fermanagh are one of the stories of the National League in terms of the way they've gone about their business. They've won an awful lot of close games coming down the home stretch by a point or so on, and you know, you just have to, you know, really tip your hat to Kieran Donnelly, what he has done there and how he has built this project. He was obviously involved with Peter Canavan's regime going back a number of years ago, so there's been brilliant consistency within the Fermanagh setup. You know, when you think of the number of managers that have come through there, they've had a lot of high calibre people that have developed a lot of footballers, and I know that they're obviously investing as well in their facilities up there in terms of their centre of excellence and all that. So there's a lot of things going on in Fermanagh beneath the surface that's really propelling them to the top of the pile within that. But you would think that Mickey Graham will get a tune out of Cavan and that they get across the line, just given when you look at the quality there of Darragh McVeaty, Killian Clark, Kieran Brady, you know, Garage McKernan, one of the best footballers in the country, and then the platform that Raymond Gallaghan gives them from a kick out, they've got a lot about them.
Should be a decent match. The final match we're going to discuss is the first final of the weekend. Sligo versus Wicklow throws in at 5 PM. Both Sligo and Wicklow looking to do something that you achieved in the past, and that is win a Division 4 title, of course, Aston.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Look,
it's the Battle of Cross McGlen.
It is the Battle of Cross McGlen. Like, this weekend, we like just coming in thinking about it, like, it's a banquet of football, but it's kind of peppered with a lot of different little bits and pieces, subplots in it. And the Cross McGlen, just reading an article with midweek, Oisín McConville saying, like, how, you know, his own relationship with John Mack over the years, and he you know, he was casting his mind back to when there were 5 or 6 kicking a ball around on the green and Cross, and their journey to date now, you know. And he made reference to John Mack is actually his manager, because he's over the under 12s in Cross McGlean, and John Mack is the GD or the games development officer within it. So there's obviously a great bit of banter going on there, but this one will be really keenly contested as well, I think. You know, like, Sligo are the form team. They have taken almost maximum points coming through. They've played a lot of really good football, a really solid outfit. They look like that they're a bit further ahead again than Wicklow. But Wicklow have had a couple of really big results in their last number of games, particularly the one where they turned Laois over and then beat Leitrim, you know, and that really propelled them on, obviously, to their victory last weekend. And Wicklow have a very good record in Croke Park. I remember going back Mico's years when they got there, they won a Tommy Murphy Cup, had a couple of big results along the way there as well. Remember Kildare, and I remember the team that I was involved with in 2012. We went up and we played the Division 4 final against Fermanagh and beat them, and that was again against the Head. So Wicklow will be up there with a lot of confidence. They've a huge number of really, really good young players, Pep mixed in again with some experience like the likes of Dean Healy and Pádraig O'Toole and these guys. So it's going to be a really, really tight one. I just give an edge, I think, to Wicklow.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I just have a feeling. I don't know why, but it's just. Yeah, okay. Maybe it's
we might chat to next week and see if you're right or wrong. Listen, Austin, really appreciate your patience waiting around to chat Gaelic football. Should be a big weekend with the four league finals on this weekend, but that's not all the Gaelic games action this weekend, because there is a Division 3A and 3B final tomorrow in hurling. Roscommon Armagh are in Navan at 2 p.m. Cavan Leitrim's in Abbottstown at 3 p.m. Division 2B final, Mead versus Donegal is in Leitrim at 2 p.m. and a Division 2A final, Kildare versus Offaly, throws in at 2 p.m. in Port Laois. And here's our own Shane McGrath with his expert views on that clash of the Ash.
Game on.
Hurling.
Well, Shane, Division 2A final between Kildare and Offaly, Sunday at 2 o'clock in Port Laois. For me, the two best teams in Division 2A this year anyway, Shane. Kildare and Offaly, both undefeated, 4 wins and a draw each. Kildare plus 30 on the scoring difference, Offaly plus 26, and that's all that really separated them, because when they met in round 5, it was a draw game between them, 217 to 23 points, and that 4-point scoring difference got Kildare straight into the final, and Offaly playing a semi-final in against Kerry, which they won by 4 points. For me, Shane, both these counties, they're really at a crossroads now, and I think that Division 1, getting up to Division 1 hurling would be massive to further develop the great work that's going on at county board levels in both counties, and what's going on in the underage structures as well. If you take Kildare, what Naas are doing at club level, really challenging at the very, very top now when it comes to senior club hurling, what their underage teams are doing, under 17s, their minors under 20 teams, pushing on, being really competitive in Leinster. And for me, only a matter of time before they do win one of those Leinster championships. Awfully the same what they did in the minor All-Ireland last year, you know, they just engulfed the whole country, and you know, and everyone, maybe Bahir Tipperary, was shouting from the All-Ireland minor final last year, and what they did with the amalgamated schools this year, winning the Leinster championship. So Division 1 hurling would be a must for one of these, and to help further push on what they're doing. Again, I talk about when there's nothing between them, Offaly averaging 24 points a game, Kildare are averaging 25 points a game. Offaly will be looking to Owen Cahill, David Nelly and Charlie Mitchell. Owen Cahill averaging 12 points a game. And Kildare then looking for James Burke, Jerry Keegan, Cahill McCabe and these guys. James Burke is their free taker and he's averaging 10 points a game. So I'm expecting a rip-roaring game there, nothing between them on Sunday. And do you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if it actually was a draw there on Sunday and we got extra time.
Game on.
Hurling.
UFM. Game on.
Racing.
Now it is Friday evening on Game On, so that means Jane Mangan joins me now to chat racing. And Jane, let us just dive straight in and chat Leopardstown, because this Sunday is Classic Trials Day at the Dublin Racecourse for both the Guineas and Derby contenders. Aidan O'Brien has won the Ballysacks Stakes 11 times and fields 3 of the 7 intended runners this Sunday. But Jane Mangan, who is best?
It was best is probably Alexander Rupless. If you're looking at Ryan Moore's booking and the market, he was very good when he won at Galway last year, beating Espionage, a horse that would go on to be just beaten in a Group 1. So Aidan is always formidable in the Ballysacks. He's ran the likes of Galileo, Yates, High Chaparral and Broom in it, and he looks like he has a strong hand. But of course, his son Dunnock O'Brien beat him last year with Kids the Deal. He saddled Alder this time around, Joseph having up and under. But you mentioned Guineas Trials as well. The Group 3 for the fillies, the 1,000 Guineas Trial. This is the race of the day for me. 14 runners. Ger Lyons has got Zarinsk in there. Tarawa for Dermot Well, the man who has Tahira at home in Rosewell, the Antipode's favourite for the Guineas. She runs in the same colours. Not Even Close for Dunnock O'Brien. One from one. Taking the likes of Impact Warrior for Paddy Toomey and Madly Truly for Joseph O'Brien. That is a very deep race. He could run well in that race and finish fifth or sixth. And the 2,000 Guineas Trial for the Colts, half the field, only 7 running this. John Murphy has a pair of contenders in here. But again, we will look to the tried and trusted, and maybe it'll be a time for Jessica Harrington and Shane Foley to shine with a bold discovery. The horse is third in the Masters Kilavullen Stakes, winner of his maiden at Naas, and yeah, I'm looking forward to getting back on the flat track. Just before we go, I know we have to mention some of the highlights of the weekend as well. For me, the Ulster National, the Randox Ulster National at Downpatrick on Sunday looks like a very good affair as well. 15 runners, Gordon Ellis doubly represented with Punitive and Secura, both being claimed off by Corey McGivern and Michael O'Sullivan. The Waterford trainer Declan Queeley's got My Design in there, as well as Dermot McLaughlin selling Wah Wah. But it might be one of the lighter weights, maybe a Mercury Lane for Paul Nolan or Space Cadet for Garota Lachlan down the bottom. That might take the Randox Ulster National. And Ballysound have their first meeting of the year tomorrow. So it's all happening this weekend. It mightn't be Group 1 and Grade 1, but it's competitive nonetheless, Shane.
Absolutely is. Jane Mangan, you've rounded that one up perfectly. Thank you as always. Brilliant stuff as ever from Jane Mangan on Friday Night Racing. Just before we do go, we did get a couple of texts in just asking if St. Pat's UCD is on or off. It is on. There was a late pitch inspection at Richmond Park, but that has been passed. So 7:45, Pat's UCD is on. So Sinead, that is all we have time for from all of the Game On team. It is goodbye, but do stay tuned to 2FM because the official chart show is up next with Blondin and Tracy after we check in with the news desk.